How can you simplify your partner experience? How can you be a great partner to them and acknowledge the fact that you need them as much as they need you and build programs that really respect their time? And you try to earn that partnership every day with every program you put in front of them.
If you're a technology partner looking to optimize your engagement with the tech giants like Microsoft, you're in the right place. Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to the 46th episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. This episode of the podcast focuses on the role of channel marketing to help many of our listeners accelerate growth and scale their business. My interview guest is Mike Moore, a seasoned channel marketing executive whom I had the pleasure to work with at Microsoft. Today, Mike serves as the Vice President of Channel Strategy at Averitech. Averitech offers channel marketing automation software delivered in the cloud. In this episode, Mike joins me to discuss his company, the role of channel marketing in an organization, his career journey, and his new book, Marketing Multiplied, A Real World Guide to Channel Marketing for Beginners, Practitioners, and Executives, which he co-authored with Averitech CEO, Peter Thomas. As with each of my episodes, I appreciate your support. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell your friends about it. And I'd love your feedback. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram at Vince Menzione. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vince.
It is great to have you. You and I had the opportunity to work together on channel go-to-market at Microsoft, and now you're the Vice President of Channel Strategy at Averitech. And we know we're both passionate around the channel, and so I'm glad you're able to join today.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm a big fan of the podcast, so it's nice to be in the guest chair.
It's nice to have you here. And, you know, I was on the other side of that chair on your webinar. So great to have you sitting on the other side and, you know, taking the questions from me. So first, for our listeners today, can you tell us a little bit about Averitech and the company's value proposition?
Yeah, sure. So Averitech's a company that's focused on channel marketing. And we have a software platform as well as the services that kind of go along with it to support brands who go to market through channel partners. You know, many companies use marketing automation products to be able to promote their own messages and tell stories to the market, things like HubSpot and Marketo and Eloqua. But the niche that we serve is for companies like Microsoft, SAP, those kind of companies who go to market through channel partners and need a tool that's going to help them enable their channel partners to take their marketing messages, personalize those with their own logos and value proposition, and then extend those out to customers and prospects. So that's the space that we serve.
It's a pretty unique space. And how did the company end up focused on this space?
Well, I can take credit for this, at least in part. So when I was at Microsoft, 14 years ago, working in the SMS&P organization and focused on events on an event team within Microsoft that existed at the time, we were doing hundreds of events across the United States each year and doing a great job and great feedback from the business and, you know, great numbers and results. But our vice president at the time kind of challenged us to say, how can you do that through partner? How can you extend the work that you're doing? And so we came up with this idea of creating a program called Microsoft Partner Events. And it was a website and a team of concierge folks who helped partners plan and execute events. And we acted as almost an internal service vendor to other teams at Microsoft. We needed a software platform to kind of manage that, or at least that was the idea. Like, how can we automate this to help channel partners produce their own events? And so as the business owner of the program at Microsoft, I hired Averitech to custom build a platform for that need. Now, what they were able to do years afterwards is kind of take that need that we had at Microsoft and take it up a level, add more tactics than just events, and turn it into a commercial product that they then went and sold or licensed, I guess I should say, to Cisco, Juniper Networks, Citrix, SAP, and many others. So that's the platform that we have at Averitech today, but it all started with the Microsoft Partner Events program 14 years ago.
So we have a lot of technology listeners. Some of them are partners of the technology giants. And you mentioned some of the technology giants here. Who is your ideal customer today? Like, where is your target?
Yeah, for us, we work with SAP is a client. We work with RSA and SonicWall and CA and many others. So it's those brands that go to market through channel partners that we can do a lot to help simplify how they work together with channel partners, make it very easy for partners to come in and take advantage of all the great marketing content that the brands are creating. And we've really built out the product lineup at Averitech over the last couple of years. So we have different editions of the software. So for people who are just kind of getting started, more in startup mode or small channel, all the way through the large industry titans, we have a product offering for everyone. So for any of them, you know, those are definitely some options for us to be able to support the growth of their channel.
So we have a lot of independent software vendors out there, more in the startup mode. Maybe they've taken their application and moved it to Azure or to AWS. They too would be targets for your product and services.
Yeah, in fact, you know, we look at this category of channel marketing automation software and say that providing this tool set to channel partners is table stakes at this point. It's just a basic requirement and basic expectation that channel partners have. Partners wouldn't be expected in this day and age to go ahead and download a set of materials that you give them and then figure out how to deploy that on a website or how to plug that into some email platform of their choice. People expect that they're going to come in and have that kind of Microsoft Office, you know, level of sophistication, right? Like you just click next, finish, and then you've launched a campaign, right? So that's what we offer in the product. And we know that startups and others want to provide that to channel partners. Previously, you had to invest, you know, six figures or more in a platform like ours to do that. So we've been able to scale down the product as well as the pricing to have an addition for those kind of startup environments.
Nice. And we're going to provide some links to that in our show notes today, Mike. But, you know, first off, I want to talk a little bit about your new book, right? So you co-authored a book with your CEO, Peter Thomas, and it's focused on this unique segment. It's called Marketing Multiplied, a real world guide to channel marketing for beginners, practitioners, and executives. How did that all come about?
We focus a lot on content at Averitech as a means of marketing, right? So inbound marketing is this philosophy that HubSpot created and evangelizes, but many in the industry have embraced, where you use rich content that's helpful, helps people learn things. It's not product oriented or, you know, kind of self-involved. You're putting things out there that are going to help people learn and be more successful in their jobs. And then that gets them interested in you and what you do, and then they want to get interested in your products and those kind of things. So we really embrace the inbound methodology at Averitech for our own marketing and have created a lot of different ebooks and frameworks and templates and things that we offer. But as Peter and I talked about kind of what was next for our content, one of the things we really discovered is that it's hard to tell the long story and kind of put all the pieces together when all you're doing is blog articles or ebooks. So we came up with the idea for the book as a way to bring a lot of the things that we've been working on and saying as we talk to customers or prospects and put it all in one book that someone could read either from end to end and really understand our perspective on how channel marketing should be done, or that they could take a chapter at a time when they have a specific need that they want to address.
And you mentioned in the book that there's over a million people with channel marketing in their job titles, and there's zero books in this space. Why do you suppose that's true?
Well, from our point of view, channel marketing, you know, much like channel in general, and I know this is a favorite topic of yours, you know, if you look at people in their careers, you know, it's, you have accidental professions that we run into all the time. Sales is one of them, right? No one goes and gets a degree for sales. You know, you end up in sales because you're good at talking to people and people like working with you, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Channel marketing is a similar discipline. People are often in channel roles because they are good at working with people outside the company. They show great empathy for how they work with others. And, you know, there are quite a few marketing books that address direct marketing topics, but for some reason, no one has written about channel marketing. Specifically, you know, we have this tech industry orientation to what we do, but if you call it alliance marketing or affiliate marketing or all the other names for it, there really wasn't anything in this space. So we're not sure quite why. I think maybe it's the accidental nature of things, but we're happy to be able to put this book out and to share our point of view with people who are in this space and really trying to figure out if they're doing it well, right? So when you have a job in a discipline that's very niche like channel marketing, you may ask yourself, am I really living up to my full potential here? Am I doing it well? How do I compare with the best in the industry? But there's no place to go for that information. until now. And that's where we think Marketing Multiplied can help people provide that perspective.
So you sort of set for the listener the benchmarks. What are the best doing?
Right. And that's where we, as we talk to different companies in our day-to-day work at Averitech, everybody wants to know what everyone else is doing. And so, and it's a natural thing that as human beings, right, we're always curious about what other people are doing, people like us, and am I doing well? There's certainly a competitive dimension to that where people want to know if they're better than the competition. Are they the most successful? People want that kind of recognition. So reading the book, you can get a sense, and we use a lot of, this is kind of the real world, you know, dimension of the title here, is we use a lot of examples from our own career experiences and the people that we've worked with to tell some of those stories and provide some of that so people can assess and figure out, where am I in the spectrum? Am I really successful? Is there more that I should be taking on? If so, what specifically?
You discuss a modern marketing methodology that aligns to how buyers buy today. Can you explain in greater detail what that is to our listeners?
Unfortunately, one thing we see in channel marketing is that it's usually a couple of years behind the rest of marketing. And I think it's because channel marketing is so much more complex. And really, it's so much more than just marketing. It's partner enablement. It's so many pieces. So when we set out to write the book, one of the things we wanted to try to do is see if there was an opportunity to help channel marketers catch up and get current with where the industry is. And that really starts with this digital buyer's journey. If you think about the next vacation that you and your family want to take, where are you going to go to do research? Right? You're going to go to the web. You're going to go search for something. You're going to go to your social network. You're going to ask people for recommendations. You're probably not going to go directly to the providers of vacation services, whether that was, you know, Disney or airlines or, you know, other resorts and those kind of things, to ask them for recommendations. You're going to search. You're going to go to friends and family in the network. So similarly, in the B2B world, we know that people apply that same approach to buying. And there are three distinct stages in this buyer's journey that we want channel marketers to understand, think about, and plan for. The first stage is learning. Everyone is always in learning mode. As we read newspaper articles, as we scroll Facebook or LinkedIn, everyone's in learning mode. You're always trying to pick up new ideas and looking for something that's going to catch your eye. But it's more passive. We're always in learning mode. If we see something that catches our eye or strikes a nerve with us, then maybe we'll actually progress to shopping mode. That might be the vacation idea, or it might be the frustration at work where you see that there's got to be a better way to do project management or to work with my sales team or to work with my channel partners. That shopping behavior now, once you've identified a need, you have this orientation that you're looking for ways to solve your problem. Among all the things that exist in the world, what products, services, solutions can help meet my needs to address this and make my life better or the lives of my colleagues or my channel partners better? And then the final stage of this buyer's journey is the actual buying stage. So I've learned about different solutions that are out there. I've shopped around and figured out maybe one or two or three that might be right for me. But now it's time to make the buying decision. And I want to understand which is the right choice. And quite frankly, this is where people have a lot of that, you know, potential buyer's remorse, right? You're about to sign on the dotted line. I need to see some proof, which is where customer evidence is really important. They want to hear case studies and those kind of things from others who have made the leap of faith and had successful implementations or whatever the project happens to be. But that buying information is really key to provide people with information that helps them affirm their decision, makes them minimize the feelings of regret or remorse, and helps them move forward. So there's a lot of different content that aligns with this journey, but it's really important for people to think about that process that the modern digital buyer goes through, both in B2B and B2C, to make sure that we're positioning our programs for channel partners to support that journey.
And how do you help them connect that?
Well, we've taken, in channel marketing, we have this world where we talk about to partner, through partner, with partner, and for partner. So these different motions around partner marketing, most commonly we're embracing through partner, right? How can I deliver my message through partner to reach end customers and prospects? Well, that's a great way to think of it and kind of orient your programs as a channel marketer, but you need to think more specifically, if I'm going to do through partner marketing, how do I align with through partner that hits learning, shopping, and buying stages of the buyer's journey versus just do what most brands do today, which is they really just hit the buying stage content. Here's my product and here's why it's so great and you should buy it. Mm. We need to fill in the other two stages of the buyer's journey. And that's just for through partner marketing. Then you think about two partner marketing, which is what's the message you deliver to channel partners to help them understand why this is valuable to them. And brands often struggle with that piece as well.
You also outlay a framework, a channel engagement framework in the book. Can you share some of that or take our listeners through that?
Sure. So the channel engagement framework was something that I thought of. So after leaving Microsoft, you know, you take for granted so much that you have when you work at a company like Microsoft, both, you know, the frameworks and the methodologies and the things, you know, just the common language that people understand by working together in a business like that. And after leaving Microsoft, I went to work at GE Healthcare and then on to Progress Software. And I found that as I was trying to explain things to people who didn't have that Microsoft background that I benefited from, we didn't have all the frameworks and those kind of things that we needed. So I created this channel engagement framework as a way to help my team at Progress. And then I ended up turning it into an ebook when I came to Veritech, just to think about the life cycle or kind of the different needs of a partner. So the different kind of chunks of the wheel here are planning, enablement, demand creation, evangelism, and communication. So if you're a channel team and you're trying to build your plan that you're going to roll out for the year, you need to have some sort of framework to organize your thoughts, ideas, programs, those kind of things. So the channel engagement framework gives you those different phases, the five pieces that I mentioned of around planning, enablement, demand creation, evangelism, communication, to build out your plan. And quite frankly, that should be used when you're reviewing it with your boss to get approval to roll out the plan or get the budget that you need. But also you can use it with your channel partners and say, we're rolling out a series of planning initiatives or enablement initiatives. And it lets them know that you've put some thought and some structure into the plans in a way that's going to optimize their time spent in the relationship with you versus getting kind of random acts of marketing or random acts of communication that just come their way.
I like that. Random acts of marketing are it describes how many organizations that don't have a clear plan go to market.
Yeah, it's a good soundbite, but realistically, people don't like the random nature of things. They like to be able to plan. And what we think is this framework gives you that. So in the book, what we do is pull this together and say, if you think about the modern marketing methodology here and kind of this new digital buyer's journey, if you apply the framework to of kind of what a channel partner needs from support and enablement and demand creation and these services from you, and then you think about how all that comes together, we lay it out chapter by chapter so you can bring these pieces together and either apply all of it to what you're trying to do in your channel marketing programs today, or quite frankly, you can pick and choose the pieces that are going to be relevant and helpful based on wherever your organization is at in your work with channel partners.
Sounds like a must read for anybody who's in the channel looking to build out a program.
Well, thanks. I mean, we've had fun with it, and the nice part about the feedback we've received from people who have read it so far is that we really intended to write it for channel marketers, but we've received feedback that other execs or channel sales execs, CMOs, those kind of folks would all benefit from reading it as well to better understand the channel marketing function and how to partner with them or how to manage them. Or even from a channel partner's perspective, I heard from a guy the other day who's a Microsoft partner, and he was saying, now I understand more about what the brands are trying to do as they work with me, whether it's Microsoft or HP. I understand more of their perspective. So it helps him show empathy to what they're trying to do, and he feels like he can better take advantage of their programs.
Yeah, and I agree with you too, because sales and marketing in the channel are so closely aligned. You can't have one without the other. They flow together.
Absolutely.
So I want to shift gears here a little bit. You know, you and I have spent a lot of time here in the channel. We've been watching this amazing business transformation that's been going on since we both left Microsoft, in fact. And is there anything that you're seeing now that you didn't expect to see a year ago?
I don't know if I see anything that I didn't expect to see. One of the things that I try to remind myself of all the time, because I see a lot of people struggling with the transformation, and it's like the never-ending transformation as well. You know, people talk about digital transformation or transformation with the cloud and these kind of things. And it's, you know, we've been talking about it. I think if you go back and search, you know, for years, we've been talking about transformation. So the thing that I try to remind people of and try to think of myself is that there are many things about the industry that haven't changed. And there are many things about working with channel partners that hasn't changed at all either. And so if we can let the rest of the transformation unfold, but take stock of kind of the things that haven't changed, like partners are spread super thin. They're trying to run complex businesses. They're trying to make this transformation from on-prem delivery to cloud delivery or hybrid in most cases. They're looking at, you know, changing financial situations, compensation changes, those kind of things, like a lot of complexity there. Customers still require significant handholding when it comes to IT product implementations. You know, the cloud still takes a ton of integration work to make all these different things work, whether you subscribe to Microsoft Office 365 or G Suite or whatever it happens to be. Everybody has a ton of cloud subscriptions to different things, and getting it all to work together still requires a lot of work. So channel partners have a lot on their plate. So if you think of that and how that really hasn't changed as a brand in channel marketing, the space that I really look after, I try to think of, you know, what hasn't changed about that? How can you simplify your partner experience? How can you be a great partner to them and acknowledge the fact that you need them as much as they need you, and build programs that really respect their time? And you try to earn that partnership every day with every program you put in front of them.
You know, you bring up some really good points, and I've talked about the transformation from that partner perspective as well, because change is not easy. Organizations like Microsoft and others ask partners to pivot on a dime, and they can do that because they're of a certain size and have financial might. But smaller organizations sometimes have trouble with that. They have trouble with that transformation, and they have to change their business models, especially from an on-prem to a cloud model.
Well, and that's, I think, one of the things that I noticed in my work at Microsoft was, and it got better towards the end of my time there, but, you know, we used to come out with the list of priorities for the year that, you know, had 15 or 20 or 25 items on it. And you go to your channel partners with that list of priorities, and I'll say the old Microsoft would kind of put all of that on the table and ask the partner to embrace all 25 priorities or whatever they were, which is absurd, right? Because even Microsoft, with all of its resources and people and everything, struggled to really do well on all of those. It got better, I say, towards the end, because people were coming up with shorter lists, and I think also getting more empathetic in the work with partners, where you would say, here's our list of 6 or 7 priorities. Which of these is also important to you that we can partner on and create some activity around? So it was that empathy, I think, to the partners to say, I know you're not going to be able to take all of this on, even if you're a large reseller partner, which I worked with them in my final role at Microsoft. They wanted to be focused on a couple of key things and really drive some great results versus trying to be a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that was, you know, the right approach to try to make that change.
I agree. And, you know, I was just recounting in my mind while you were speaking here about that scorecard we talked about, you know, the 25 priorities and making sure the partner was aligned to every single one of them. And I think the cloud has simplified that quite a bit, right? It's, you know, cloud solutions are a little bit more, I'm going to drop a word here, but let me just think about this a second. I'll say that the cloud helps to unify the solution set in one bucket, if you will. And the metrics around that bucket are a little bit easier to measure than across multiple sets of solutions within an organization. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I think when we can simplify how success is measured, whether it's for our internal teams or for channel partners, we can all be more effective. When it's really obscure how we measure things or what defines success, or quite frankly, when we're not transparent with channel partners about that, then it just creates confusion. And quite frankly, that starts to create a situation where partners wonder how committed the brand is to the partnership. And so I think transparency, empathy, those are really important attributes to deliver and explore as you're kind of working with channel partners.
Yeah. Good point. Hey, you spend a lot of time building channels and teams. What characteristics do you believe make a great partner?
Well, this is something we actually included a chapter on in the book around kind of hiring and what skills to look for in channel marketers. But I really think it applies to everyone. And I've already used the word, I think, a few times here in our discussion. But to me, I'll just take that piece out.
Yeah, I'll edit it.
Sorry, the inopportune.
Take a drink of water.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
So for me, empathy is really key. And I've already talked about it a little bit in our discussion, but I didn't shake it. Sorry. It's going to be one of those things now, right? Like I can't.
Yeah. Just take a couple breaths. We're in no hurry.
All right. I'll try and speak a little bit before I dive into the answer. That way I can make sure I've got it. So for me, I think empathy is really important, whether you're looking for channel partners or hiring team members, whether they're salespeople or marketers. The nature of people and working with each other, empathy to me is a really important attribute, and it's worth hiring people for. And even I know I still use the Microsoft Education Competencies that's on the Microsoft.com site. They have questions where you can probe around empathy. To me, those are really important questions to consider. To bring the right people together, because as we bridge organizations and teams, having people who can take themselves and put themselves into other people's shoes, it's really important skill set, because then everything else is easier after that if you're willing to think about what other people are going through and what their challenges are and how to solve for that. Then you're always going to create successful programs.
Now, I agree with you. And I always talk about the... Now I'm having a mental break again. I always talk about the listen first aspects, right? To seek to understand before being understood, you know, sort of the Covey 7 habits approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Mike, as you might know from listening to other episodes, I'm fascinated by how people got to this particular spot in their career. How did you get started in technology and in the channel?
Well, my story is probably like a lot of people, and I've already talked about, you know, sales as an accidental profession, and that's where I got started in the channel was selling. I was working full-time while going to college full-time, and I was also enrolled in the National Guard, doing a six-year stint there as a way to pay for school, and I thought I was going to move on to a career in law enforcement, and a couple of years into that journey, I had an opportunity to go work at a software hardware reseller that was big in the Boston area at the time, corporate software. And a friend had started working there, and there was a telemarketing job where I would just have to call people on the phone and talk about computers, and they were going to pay me $25,000 a year and would give me tuition reimbursement. And I thought that was incredible because it was, 24 years ago. For a guy like me. So that was how I got my start. And then there was no turning back from there. The culture of tech and the change obviously brings in a lot of opportunities for sales because everybody always needs something new because there's always a new product. And there's always something new happening, some new innovation happening that made it an exciting industry to work in.
And that was an exciting time in tech as I, you know, counted my pinkies back. That was just before the Windows 95 launch, if I recall, right? So 95
timeframe, maybe. And I was a channel partner at the time, and that's how I think I first met Microsoft people was at the Windows 95 launch. And then through my work with them, started getting to know some people there and went to work for another couple of channel partners, and then eventually built enough connections that when an opportunity opened up here in New England where I live, I was able to make the move and join the Microsoft team. So it was an exciting career achievement for me to join Microsoft and come on board, and was able to do a lot of interesting roles during my time there.
What was one best piece of advice you received along your journey?
Well, I took the class that I think you referred to a little while ago, the Covey class with a guy named Mahan Khalsa. And to me, the sales training that I took there, the Helping Clients Succeed course, and then Mahan has come to many Microsoft partner conferences and delivered a talk based on that. To me, that was the most important training I think I've ever participated in. And I had a lot of great training during my time at Microsoft, but a lot of that showing empathy, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Intent counts more than technique. You know, I could go on and on with sound bites from Mahan Khalsa just because it was so useful for me. So That's a course and a set of CDs that's still available that I think you can get off of Amazon.
That's great. That's great advice. And I'm a big fan of Covey's work and some of the work that you describe as well, and some of those points, but we'll put some links there into the show notes for our listeners. What about hurdles? You know, you were the big tech giant, you then went off to a couple other companies, then, you know, kind of into a new, more startup-y kind of situation. Were there any hurdles you faced and how did you overcome them?
I'll share one that I don't always share, but I think it's something that people need to talk about. I was 2 years into my Microsoft career and Microsoft reorganized and the position that I was in was being eliminated and it was being recreated under a new role name. But many people were, you know, likely to get those positions, but I was getting the feeling that I wasn't going to be successful. And that was kind of shocking to me that I had worked for many years in my career to build connections and to get on board at Microsoft. And for a lot of people, that's a big career achievement and a big career goal. And it was for me too. And the thing that I learned in that experience, so, you have a certain amount of time. The way that it works is you sit down with your manager in HR and they tell you your position's been eliminated. You have a certain amount of time to go find a new role here at Microsoft, or you can basically take a check and leave today. And I said, I'll take the time, please, and start working. So the first thing that I learned is when you're in that situation, when you're sitting kind of on the edge of the cliff there and about to go out the door, first off, you really learn who your friends are, right? The people who are saying, how can I help you? Who can I introduce you to? What teams have you thought of? And they're willing to put themselves out there and make recommendations to help you get introduced. Versus the people who, you know, kind of pass you by in the hallway and don't even say a thing. So that was really eye-opening to me because it was the first time in my career I'd been through that. And I'll never forget the people who helped me. And the thing that I've tried to take away from that experience too is that whenever I run into anyone who is looking for a job, either because they don't have one or because they're unhappy and they're looking for a change, I will always take the time to stop and help them, even if it's to just provide some encouragement. But if I can talk to them and make some recommendations or make some introductions or whatever I can do to help them, I'll do it, because you never know when you're going to be back in that situation yourself. And, you know, it's a difficult position to be in. And many people found themselves in that over the years at Microsoft with all the organizational changes. But for me, that was probably one of the more significant hurdles that I faced in my career. So, you know, great learning. Now I can look back on it, but at the time I was, as I said, 2 years into my career, we had one daughter, and actually I think the other, our second daughter had just been born. So from a timing standpoint, family-wise, pretty stressful time period in life. But again, you know, it was the people who took the time, reached out, were helpful to me that really meant a lot and really taught me a lot to help me get through that.
That one really resonated with me. I've been through similar circumstances and feel the same way about helping others out. So that's really great. That's really great nuggets for our listeners. Mike, what about advice that you would give to your 25-year-old self?
Well, it's funny. I think, you know, I have, so the kids that I just mentioned, we have three kids now. I mentioned the two daughters, but we have a son as well. And my oldest daughter is graduating high school. And she's headed off to college in the fall. Nice. And so I think about that in the context of this question and think, you know, this is some of the advice that I'm talking with her about now. And, you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves when we're young in life to have a plan and stick to the plan. And we always picture a linear path to our goals, right? We're going to go from A to B to C. Now, old timers like you and I, Vince, we know that it's oftentimes, you know, we're going to go from A to B, and then there's going to be a new A that pops up and we start over again, or we're kind of going on this very indirect path, this winding road. So I think the advice that I'm giving to my daughter, as well as to my younger self in the context of this question, would be just trusting that things are going to work themselves out, right? Stay focused on the goal, but don't worry about how many points are between the beginning and the end of whatever that goal is that you're pursuing. As long as you're taking even small steps forward, things are likely going to be okay. So keep your focus, keep the drive, but don't worry about things that pop up those are just opportunities for more learning and more adjustment, and it's going to make for a richer life down the road.
That's great advice. Thank you for sharing that, Mike. And is there a book that you've read recently or gifted often that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, it's another one I think that I'm talking to my daughter about and encouraging her to read. There's a guy named Poe Bronson, and I guess we can put the link in the notes here. And he wrote a book called What Should I Do With My Life?
What Should I Do With My Life?
Wow. What Should I Do With My Life? So Poe wrote this book when he was a best-selling author. He had written one book, and this was kind of in the dot-com era. So going back, you know, 15 or 20 years probably at this point, but he had written one book and it was successful, but he was trying to figure out if he could make the pivot to be a full-time author. Could he make a living, support his family, and write books for a living? And so he turned that question for himself into a research project where he asked over 50 people how they decided what they should do with their lives. Hmm. And so by telling their stories, he also answers the question for himself and turned it into a very successful book. The title is What Should I Do With My Life, not What Will I Do With My Life. And so sometimes what you should do and what you'll actually do is different. And he explores that through some of the stories as well. So kind of in my mindset, as I've talked about it, you know, trusting that things are going to work out and not worrying about a linear path from A to B and kind of your life goals, it gives people a way to explore and find out, kind of answering for themselves what they're really passionate about, what they can really work on and feel kind of pleasure and success and results from achieving, and trying to figure out who they're really trying to please as they do that. Are they worried about trying to please their parents or trying to meet, you know, someone else's expectations, or are they really trying to satisfy their own needs? So it's a good book. I think it holds up well, you know, even 20 years after or whatever it's been since it was written. And I think that whether you're young or whether you're mid-career stage or your later career stage and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life, I think it's a great book to explore.
Sounds like it. And we will provide a link and Poe Bronson, and we'll have that in our show notes. Well, thank you. So I want to thank you. I know how precious your time is and how compressed your schedule is. You've been an amazing guest. If our listeners want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do so, Mike?
Yeah, I think I'm on just about every social network that you can find, but LinkedIn is probably the easiest for the folks here. So just look for Mike Moore from Averitech, and would love to connect with people. And if there's anything that I can do to help, or if you're interested in the book, you know, we'd love to hear from anybody who's read it or has some thoughts or suggestions. We'll probably do a second edition. So just love to connect with people. So yeah, LinkedIn, and you can find me there.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Vince. I appreciate being on, and thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.